talking pre-show about people we work with, and we won't use any names and stuff, but it kind of puts into perspective of just you go through life and you meet people and various people of various, you know, races or cultures and things, and it gives you a sense of like seeing the world through different people's eyes, and some of them you become very close with, like you and I are, Matt, or our buddy Frank and Long, and we become best friends. Then you have people that are acquaintances, and then you have coworkers, and then you have your family that you can't choose, and then you have single serving friends, as they said from Fight Club, that you know you kind of might talk to while you're waiting in line for a movie or whatever. But yeah. Then you have the people that sometimes you just look at and you just automatically think to yourself, how did you make it this far in life? You know? I've had a lot of that lately. It seems like during the holiday season, that really comes out in people. You know, it's just like you look at people and you just think like, the fuck did you make it 35, 40 years of life, you know? And not always, and I don't mean that in a sense of like, why are you alive or anything like that, but I'm just like, you made it this far and people like you sometimes, you know, just like, yeah. I know that's a horrible thing for me to say because I generally get along with most people, but as I get older, I really just don't give a fuck. And I kind of look at people like, nah, yeah, you're just, no, you know, does that make sense? And
that makes sense.
And I'm not,
yeah, maybe they're really cool at parties. Yeah. You know? Maybe they're the guy that pulls out the katana and is like, hey, hold this hot dog on your nose. I'm going to cut it off. Like, I used to be a sword dude, mastered the sword in martial arts.
And I'm not sure my point in this cold opening, but it got me thinking about like, you know, sometimes you just have to bite your tongue and shake your head and pray that that person doesn't have swords at home and does something crazy, maybe, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's behind closed doors. Like, what are you doing, man?
And any of my coworkers that might listen to this show sometimes, I'm not talking about anyone specific, so don't make guesses, because I can already see someone's eyes or ears going, oh, I know what he's fucking talking about. And that's not necessarily true. It's just a general statement about the people you come across in life. And there is actually kind of a reason to this that we'll get to here in just a bit, with a movie I watched this week. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
And getting ready for Christmas, man. Almost there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. Doing the shopping. And then you think you're done, and these cool little deals pop up on Amazon. Right? And you're like, damn, that's perfect. I didn't think about that. Well, and, you know, then you're like, well, this kid's got too many gifts now. Now I've got to get another gift for this kid.
Exactly,
and you're
like, man.
What do I do?
On my phone, I make a list of what I got for each of them, and I'm counting it. And the other day, I was like that. One of them had three less things. I'm like, motherfucker, I can't. It's got to kind of be even. Then you're like,
yeah,
that's like 15 things each. And you're like, but then you, like you said, you see something else. I'm like, oh, it's okay if they get a couple more things. And
like, you know, like, well, this, he's got a bigger thing, and then he's just got more small things.
Right. But they cost more. And then every year you're like, I'm not, you know, I'm not going to overdo it. You know, they have enough stuff, but then, man, you see stuff and you want them to have it, because no matter what anyone says, you're going to spoil your children. I mean, you just want to.
Exactly.
It's hard not to, because they are wonderful gifts, and you want to see their joy in their face. But now, yeah, I'm almost done too, man. But you know, now I find the wrapping part and getting all ready to cause me a little more anxiety. Cause it's like, holy shit. And then every day will go by and I'm like, damn, I got 15 days. Damn, I got 14 days. Damn, I got that, like, motherfucker. It's like, I get this shit done. I'll get it done. I might even start this weekend. We'll see. I don't know. Probably not.
There we go, man. I mean, maybe shit. Not.
What do we got? 2 weeks? Yeah, we have 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks, man. 2 weeks.
Or 2 weeks, and then we're going to be. Well, 2 weeks from tomorrow is Christmas Eve. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
a week from that, we'll be like, oh, man, I'm not going to see it till next year.
Well, we're doing our family. We're doing our family Christmas the 17th, next Saturday. So I do have to get my nephew's things wrapped by then. So.
Okay.
So that'll motivate me to kind of get started. You know, but no, it is kind of a segue into Download This, where we tell people we watched and streamed and checked out this week. And, So there is a reason for that. I watched a couple movies, and I'll start. I finally got around to watching Clerks 3. Vudu had it. It was weird. They had it for $6 to rent or $8 to buy it. I'm like, I'll just fucking buy it.
Yeah.
You know, and man, you know, Kevin Smith at this point in his career has become an acquired taste. You either grow up watching his movies and you enjoy them, or you don't. He's no longer making movies to catch new viewers, right? Does that make sense? You know?
Yeah.
And that's okay. Cause Clerks 3 starts out a little wonky, but once it finds its footing, it's really well done. It's not as good as Clerks 1 or 2. I will say that. I wouldn't say my least favorite, but it's just not as good as those two, but it's just right underneath mm-hmm. them. But it's a story about these characters we grew up watching since 1994 when the first one came out. And it's definitely a poignant look back at where we've been with Dante and Randall and Jay and Silent Bob and a lot of the other characters. And it hits home big time. And that's what got me thinking about the people we meet in our life and the way it affects us. And Kevin pulls us together with a nice emotional journey of a film. And it hit home for me. And I'm trying not to get emotional on the Rebel Radio podcast here, but just think about you and I's friendship and me and Long's friendship and me and Frank's and my best buds. And Kevin did a really good job with hitting that on the nose and what's important in life and how your life is shaped by your friends and your family. You think you're living your own life every day, but you're also living other people's lives because you're affecting everyone around you. And Kevin did a really good job with it. And I tweeted out that I enjoyed the film and Kevin liked the tweet. So that kind of made my day.
There you go.
And I'm going to watch it again, man. Cause it's not super deep on an emotional level, but Kevin does just enough to grab at your heartstrings a little bit. And it's well done. So definitely a good finish to that trilogy. I don't think it's the last we'll see of those characters. I mean, that's his moneymakers. I'm sure we'll see Jay and Silent Bob again. And some of the other characters talk about doing a Tales of the Mallrats movie or whatever. So, you know, we might get, you know, some of these people Mallrats and that's fine at this point in Kevin's career. You know, hey, if he wants to keep making dick and fart movies about, you know, Jay and Silent Bob, whatever, I don't care. But definitely don't let the kids be in the room. Don't let the kids be in the room when you watch Clerks 3, because it definitely is lots of bad language in it, as usual, and lots of cock jokes and things like that.
Of course.
Man, you thought they fucked with Elias in Clerks 2? Just wait, man. They fuck with Elias, but it's hilarious. Like, it's really funny. And unexpected. Like, you're like, wow, they really fucking did that to Elias. It's pretty funny. So it was good, man. Definitely. If you've been a fan of that series, you got to see it.
I'm gonna have to watch it then.
Cause I was
kind of waiting for it to get kind of lower to that price. So yeah. maybe I'll check it out this weekend.
It's good. And then the other movie I watched, and you know, I saw the trailers all summer for this movie and I kind of honestly dismissed it as a generic action film. That's Brad Pitt's, Bullet Train that he put out. And man, don't dismiss this movie. I fucking loved it from the beginning.
I watched it too.
Yeah.
So you can,
I loved it from the beginning to the end, man. It's on Netflix and, this movie, it was rad. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of times these action movies, the comedy doesn't hit, man. And you guys, I know you and Long give me a hard time saying I don't like comedy. To me, the comedy hits in this movie very well. Brad Pitt delivers it. Like when the Hornet's dying and he's all like, you weren't prepared? What's wrong with you? Do you need a blanket? I'm just like, holy shit. I was rolling. Man, any movie that's got fucking sword fights is going to win me over. Just deadpan humor. I had no idea that Aaron Taylor Johnson, who played Quicksilver, was British. I didn't even know that until this movie. Apparently, he's in the running for James Bond. Michael Shannon playing a badass fucking villain in it.
At first, I thought that was Antonio Banderas. And I was like, did they get Antonio Banderas to play a Russian? And then he takes off his you know, face covering and it's Michael Shannon. I was like, oh shit. It's Zod.
Yeah, the guy who played Scorpion in Mortal Kombat's in there as a man. There's just so many actors in this. I mean, Ryan Reynolds even has a brief cameo.
Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, man. And Pitt is great. The whole cast is great. The premise of it is they're on this train and they're assassins and they're trying to steal some case, and they never really do ever reveal what the case is, right? Or it ends up being a bomb. Yeah,
it's money. It's I thought it was money.
Yeah, but he exchanges it for a bomb.
That girl probably made it into a bomber. Maybe he did.
It's such a cool fucking movie, man. I really liked it a lot. I haven't seen a really cool movie like that in a while. Well, Everything Ever All at Once, a couple of really cool action movies this year coming out. Don't dismiss it, man. It's on Netflix. I thoroughly enjoyed the fuck out of that movie, man. I watched it over a couple of nights, but I liked it a lot, man. It was in so many unexpected turns in it. But I also felt like it wasn't unexpected turns and that it ever like insulted the audience, you know? It was because the movie sets up a standard at the very beginning that you know it's going to be over the top and crazy. So you just kind of the movie basically opens and says, we're going to take you on a ride. Let's have fun. And that's exactly what it fucking does, man. And I can't say enough about Pitt in this movie, man. He just, without him, it doesn't work. I mean, he just is so good in it. And he's been doing good stuff for a long time now.
He plays that role really well. I like it, you know, just as much as I do his role in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, just playing an interesting character that just, you know, helps propel that movie from scene to scene. And the movie flows like a bullet train, I feel like. I feel like it's just, you know, you just keep on going. And the action just never really stops. It's different kind of action in some spots. It just changes it up, obviously, you know, to where it's just not the same thing over and over and over again. But the dialogue's great. The comedy is fun. The action comedy mix is good. What do they call her? The Hornet. The Hornet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's a Hornet. And she's like, oh, you let loose my snake. God. And he's like, oh, that was yours. the stuff with her, that was funny. A lot of fun stuff in there. And crazy, you know, just the cameos you get. Ryan Reynolds, you know, just really quickly in there. I'm trying to think if there was any other cameos that I can think of. But yes. Kick-ass, man. I was like, I had to do a hard look. Oh, shit.
I had no idea he was British, man. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And he's in there. In the
running for James Bond? Wow.
Yeah. And his partner who plays Lemon, man, that guy has been in a lot of stuff lately, man, kind of making quite a career of himself. And, I can't think of his name, but, you know, no disrespect to him. But he's been making a lot of movies. And, of course, it's from David Leitch, who directed Deadpool 2 and was – co-director, I believe at one. Was he a co-director on the first John Wick? I can't remember if he was. He might have been. I don't want to say that wrong. And so, you know, the chick who played the Hornet was Domino in Deadpool, you know, so he brought her in. Just a fun movie, man. And I think it's fair to say that a lot of people saw those trailers and kind of like dismissed it as just generic action film with Brad Pitt, but it's really a lot of fun. And I enjoyed the shit out of it. That's really all I watched this week, man, was a couple of movies, but that's more than I usually watch.
He did John Wick.
He was a co-director on the first one. John Wick.
Yeah. And then Atomic Blonde. He did Nobody. Violent Night is his. So now I was going to see Violent Night, and then I was like, I don't know. Now I'm like, man, Violent Night might be kind of fun.
Hmm.
He also did Hobbs and Shaw and Kate. I think you liked Kate. I think you watched Kate, didn't you?
Yeah, that's the one with which one is Kate? Is that the one with Mary Elizabeth Winstead?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, so he's become a pretty good director. So
He's a co-director on that one. Yeah, co-director.
But
still cool. And you know, if his name's attached to it, it's going to be entertaining, that at least.
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't like Deadpool 2 as much as the first one. But the guy's definitely a talent. I did like Atomic Blonde, and I really, like I said, I enjoyed the fuck out of Bullet Train. What else, man, what did you watch this week, man? That's really all I watched for those two movies.
Yeah, I watched that. I was, you know, I was looking forward to watching a different Christmas movie, and so I did put on A Christmas Story Christmas. Of course, 40 years later, we get a sequel to A Christmas Story, and, you know, it's good. You know, it's entertaining. A Christmas Story is better, in my opinion, but, it's cool that, you know, we have two different versions of Christmas. You know, we have it, you know, the first one's through, Ralphie's eyes and, you know, just being a kid and wanting that toy. And the second one is very much so being that adult, and trying to make Christmas happen, for your kids and the struggles that you may go through. In pursuit of that perfect Christmas day. And, you know, they pay tribute, to the actor that played the father. I can't think of his name. It was in Billy Madison, stuff like that. So they paid tribute to him. Really cool in the film. It's on Amazon. It's on HBO Max. I was going to say Amazon Max. But it's on HBO Max. If you're interested in it, it's free. You can check it out there. And it's got a lot of the tidbits of, you know, the original movie. You've got, you know, that internal monologue that he would have. And then he'd have those little, daydreams, that he would have in the middle of the those scenes where, you know, kind of the first one he turns into a cowboy and he's, you know, shooting people with that, Red Ryder BB gun. Like he's saving the house or he dies from soap poisoning. There's a lot of little scenes like that in here. So it's very much tries to capture that spirit of the original film, and, you know, twist it and mold it into this new film with a new theme. And, you know, of course, Ralphie's got a family now, and they had to pick a different actress to play the mom. Because the mom, you know, I guess mom's too old to act or something now. The lady who played the mom, she's like 82, I believe. So they picked the mom from Just Friends. It's a Ryan Reynolds movie. I know we just mentioned Ryan Reynolds, but if you've ever seen Just Friends, it's got him and I think it's got Amy Smart or Elizabeth Smart. I forget the actress's name, but it's like a rom-com Christmas movie, but I remember her from it. And then I watched, there's a documentary on Netflix. It's called The Texas Killing Fields. And if you're from Texas or Houston, or, you know, maybe you've just visited and you've gone to Galveston, there's a stretch of land, in between where League City is, kind of on 45 and Carver Road. And if you're familiar with that area, and you don't know, there's actually a movie done about this before. It stars Jeffrey Dean Morgan and a couple other actors. I just remember it's got Jeffrey Dean Morgan in it. It's documentary called Texas Killing Fields. The movie's called Texas Killing Fields, and it's about these killing fields, where women would turn up murdered in the '80s and the '90s. And, you know, because of where they were, where the stretch of land was located, killers were able to murder these young women and dump their bodies and just hop on the freeway and get away and drive away, and no one knew where they came from. So if you're interested in murder mystery stuff, you can watch that Texas Killing Fields documentary on Netflix. And you probably buy that movie Jeffrey Dean Morgan starred in. That's kind of about like a case attached to those disappearances and those murders. It's on Vudu. I think I got it for like $5 on Vudu one time. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, unsolved mystery kind of stuff, check it out. Very interesting. But other than that, and A Christmas Story Christmas, that's about all I checked out.
You know what? I want to try to watch on Netflix. I want to try to watch that troll movie.
Yes. Is it like a remake of the first troll movie? No,
it's like a whole different thing, but it looks like a Godzilla type movie, only with a troll.
Yeah. It's like, it's trending high right now. I saw that.
Yeah.
And then there's that series with the Aubrey Plaza that's trending high. And it's always fun watching Aubrey Plaza on screen, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to complain about her. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely not. Yeah. I mean, I complain about the weather first, you know, before I complain about her.
I mean, every time I watch Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, I'm like, oh, hi, Aubrey.
Hello, Aubrey, and your big brown eyes.
That's right.
And your suggestive looks.
Damn it.
I know what you're doing.
She's trying to get me to watch the movies, damn it. She knows what she's fucking doing, too.
That's right.
All right. Let's get into today's featured film, man. A movie that that came out in 2009, and it was the first movie James Cameron had made since he made Titanic and won a bunch of awards and made a shit fucking ton of money. And so there was a lot of anticipation when this film came out. It was supposed to break new ground as far as technology and the use of 3D in theaters. And I think it did. I mean, you know, it came out huge. 3D was still to this day might be the best 3D I saw in a movie ever. And it made a ton of fucking money. It's still the number one movie worldwide. I think it sits number two domestically behind The Force Awakens. But mm-hmm. it's still worldwide the number one movie of all time. And that is, of course, James Cameron's Avatar. And I thought it would be a good week to do this with the sequel coming out next week. I'm not sure. I might not see the sequel till the week I'm off just because I'm busy, man. It's like, you know, I don't know. I may have to wait a week or two, but that's okay. But Avatar came out and it essentially, man, it's about... I'm trying to think of the easiest way to summarize
it. It's about the Lorax, baby. The Lorax.
It's a three-hour movie. And
mystical creatures trying to defend the forest, trees. I speak for the trees.
From what I gather, in the far future, the Earth is dying. We're using up our resources. We've expanded into space. We're on this planet called Pandora where we're trying to look for energy resources and stuff. And I guess apparently, yeah, I noticed, I didn't really notice this. So I watched this week. The beginning of this movie is a little muddled. It's like, why are we on Pandora? You're like, oh, we're mining something. Are we taking it back to Earth? And through the military, they say, once your rotation's going, you'll go back to Earth. You'll get your legs and all that. So I guess eventually they do go back to Earth, but yet they made it sound like the Earth was dying. So I'm wondering if Cameron is ever going to explain that in any of these sequels we get. But you kind of forgive it because what Cameron does is he throws you into this world and it's a beautiful world. And so it turns out there's a mad general and he wants to just overtake the Na'vi, which are the alien natives that live on this planet. And then you have the scientists that have created this technology, which again, you just have to accept it for what it is, where you're allowed
to put a
human body into this avatar of a Na'vi. The human conscious, and go and be a part of the Na'vi. And so Sam Worthington, that's
Worthington.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
He is chosen because his brother was in part of the Avatar program, but his brother's killed and they're twins, or very close to being twins. So he's chosen to take his brother's place. And Jake, is paraplegic from his military action. For him to be able to walk again is a sense of adventure for him. And he's promised that he'll get his legs back if he does this from the general. And the general wants to use him to tell him what the Na'vi are doing so that he can get to these resources and basically spy on them. But lo and behold, Jake falls in love with an alien creature and decides that he likes the people and he doesn't want them destroyed. And they fight back against the general in a thrilling finale of a movie. And that's kind of the short version. I'm not going too much in this because most people listening to this have seen Avatar. It's one of those movies that almost everyone has seen now. But it's been some years since I've watched this. And I think my first thoughts on it is technology wise, it holds up really well. The CGI is still fantastic. It's a beautiful movie. The world building in this is extraordinary. I mean, if you're, you know, you can say all you want about the story being Dances with Wolves in space and being very simple. Okay, maybe. I'll give it that. But, man, what Cameron does so greatly is just everything in this movie, as a science fiction fan, you're like, you want to see. The mechs are fucking cool. The spaceships are fucking cool. The guns are fucking cool. The creatures,
the alien, interspecies sex.
Yes, interspecies. Cool.
Yeah,
the world of Pandora is incredible looking. The way it's created, from the floating mountains to the colorful plants and animals and flowers, and the way
they connect, you know.
And on top of that, you have an interesting enough story to hold it all together, with a climax that takes place over the almost the last 45 minutes to the hour of a movie. And it's extraordinarily done. Cameron has always been great with the climaxes of films, from Terminator 2 to True Lies. The guy knows how to close a film out. That's for fucking sure. Even Titanic, even though you knew what was going to happen, the last hour of Titanic is incredible filmmaking with the boat sinking. It really is. And that's what Cameron is so good at. And early word is that the finale of Way of the Water is right up there too, with just an extraordinary finale. And that's my first thoughts rewatching this. My initial thoughts when I saw this in theaters is like, man, that was amazing 3D. And there was a lot to take in the first time you saw it. And I remember walking out going, thoroughly enjoying it. And it's one of those movies that I've never understood the hatred this movie gets, because it does have its detractors. And I'm like, what is there to hate about Avatar? I mean, it's a well thought out, put together science fiction movie. I mean, maybe again, we'll go back to the story, might be a little simple on surface, but there's so much cool going in this movie that I think it forgives a lot of that, you know, because there's a lot of fucking cool in this movie. What do you think about Avatar?
Man, I think, I'm trying to figure out why I didn't see it in 2009. And I'm like, you know, maybe there was just too much going on. There's The Hangover, a good comedy. There's District 9, The Blind Side. I remember watching that. And then I remember watching Night at the Museum. I remember watching Jennifer's Body, Zombieland, The Ugly Truth, The Proposal, and of course, Watchmen and 9. And I just kind of got, you know, lost in translation watching Avatar, but I saw it like 2 or 3 years too late. This movie, I mean, I feel like it's just the wonder and awe that Jake is experiencing, with the new, alien race that he's come into contact with, and finding love and experiencing new things, trying to walk again, in a lot of ways through language, through, you know, experiencing what they experience and how they communicate with nature, not just with themselves. And then of course, you know, walking again, running again, really cool. You know, I think the symbolicness of him being like a child, as Zoe Saldana's character describes him, is very much so. And I think, like a child, he has to grow throughout the film and progress, and he does. And once he's fully realized, he's awesome. He's badass. He's flying in there on the most badass pterodactyl alien thing, and that's the only way he was going to rally them at the end, you know, to ride on there on the biggest fucking Harley Davidson of the sky ever, you know? But man, it's fun. I didn't realize that Sam Worthington was living out of his car whenever he auditioned for this thing. And say what you want about Sam, but that's got to be cool, man. It's like you always like hearing those stories where someone found success and was, you know, really, really roughing it up until this point.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of a Matt Damon-ish-like story, too, where Matt Damon was an unknown when he filmed Saving Private Ryan, but by the time the movie came out, his name had started to be out there. And it's kind of the same with Sam. You know, he was an unknown when he was cast, but by the time Avatar hit, he had a couple movies out and was starting to become a bit of a known name. Because Cameron started working on this movie as early as like 97, 98. He had the script. He wanted to make it then, but the technology wasn't there, so he made Titanic instead. And then he was watching The Lord of the Rings and he realized like, yeah, I think the tech is there now to do Gollum when he saw Gollum and So Avatar started going to pre-production like in 2004, 2005. And so it took almost 4 years to come to the screen from pre-production to post-production. And the post-production work was amazing. One thing I like about this movie is like Zoe Saldana, who we never see her in the film because she plays an alien, but like watching it, like you feel like it's, you can see her on screen through her character of what is that? Nateri, I think that's how you say her name. And the CGI and is so good. The motion capture work that you feel like you're watching Sam Worthington and Zoe and Sigourney Weaver and their characters play these parts on screen. And even Wes Studi, who plays, you know, been around for years, and he plays one of the aliens too. And I think that's what watching it this week, I'm like, just it hold, it's just some, I'm still in awe of the tech in this film. And the early word is that Way of the Water does even more, blows it away even more. And I think that's the most amazing thing about James Cameron is that he has always been such an innovator of the things he's done, from the Liquid Terminator and Terminator 2 to the highway chase in True Lies, which is still phenomenal. I mean, to the CGI water creature in the abyss. I mean, that's just what Cameron does. And this is a movie that gives us an entire world of this, of him being a leader in bringing new tech to film and seeing things you've never seen before. You know,
I remember whenever this came out, lesser movies that, you know, probably weren't going to be that great, were trying to say shit like using the same type of cameras that was used to shoot Avatar. I mean, they were trying to really like, man, we're like Avatar too. We're like Avatar. Yeah. You know? And that's how you know you did something great. People want to be like, well, I'm like that. That's right. What this movie is going to be like. Come watch this. Because that Resident Evil movie, that last Resident Evil movie had, I think, come out a year or two after Avatar. And they were trying to really, really push it that they had, you know, we filmed shooting these same cameras. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think
you gotta have the story too, baby.
Well, I think the only downside from Avatar was the 3D craze it caused. Like everyone was trying to be the next big 3D movie after this, and none of them ever came close. You know, and that's a fact. But this did cause a 3D craze from about 2009 to. I mean, granted, you can still go see movies in 3D now, but I would say the craze probably stayed around till 2015, 16. It started maybe about a good 5 years. You know, and then it started slowing down, and then you would get a few movies that would still come out and kind of push the 3D, but over the most part, the last several years, it's just kind of an option you have at movies, you know.
Yeah,
but there was
Piranha 3DD.
Yeah, it's one of the worst triple movies D's. Ever. One of the worst movies ever made.
Best movie ever. It has the Hoff at the end.
I've seen it. It's terrible.
Yeah, it is terrible.
All I remember
is they had to get that extra 2Ds in there.
Yeah, all I remember is the chick that catches the dead head and it motorboats her and it's dead. I'm like, what the hell did I just watch?
Like, yeah, I know, right? You're like Gary Busey.
Is that the same one that had the piranha go in? Is that the one that same one that had the piranha go in the vagina?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and it ate its way in there. Yeah,
we got a little bit of tangent there, but hey, you know what? James Cameron's first movie was Piranha 2, The Spawning. So you know what?
It's what?
Yes. You didn't know
this? I did not know that. No,
so it's all connected. Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah, it is. Oh my God.
Piranha 2, The Spawning was his first movie. And he doesn't really, he was just kind of tired. He's said before he had really nothing to do with the film other than he shot it. And when it was done, the studio kind of took it.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, so it's all connected. Piranhas, tits, and James Cameron.
Boom.
But let's talk about Stephen Lang's General Man. This is one of the great villains. It's definitely one of the great villains of screen over the last, you know, 20 years. Man, Lang plays his part to a T, man. He is a fucking badass. He's gonna do whatever it takes to get his way. He is no holds barred. I will fuck you up. I will tear you a new asshole because I'm going to do what I have to do. And, and he's fucking great in the movie, man. And, you know, and he's, the crazy thing is about Stephen Lang is he's another one of those actors. It's like, he's really this nice guy, but he plays these badasses on screen. He's always hard to play military guys and tough guys. And
I'm
curious to see how he comes back in the sequel, since he basically took a bunch of arrows, poison arrows to the chest in the end of this one. But he, without him, you know, it's just like comic book characters, man. James Cameron understands that. And I think it's funny that James Cameron sometimes wants to talk shit about comic movies, because Cameron's obviously influenced by comics and classical mythical stories. I mean, he is. Every great hero has a great villain. Whether it's the Liquid Terminator or Michael Biehn's crazed soldier in the Abyss, or, you know, True Lies a little bit more straightforward. And in this, Stephen Lang is that true villain to drive your hero in Jake to do what he has to do to protect the Na'vi and the people. So you know, Cameron obviously is drawing from classic story mythology with guys like Lang. And I would even argue that, you know, Cameron, man, Stephen Lang's general might be one of the best characters Cameron's ever written. You know, I mean, just because he's a badass.
He is pretty badass. And at first you're like, okay, this is a cool guy. He's trying to give Sam back his legs. He's served in multiple tours. And, you know, he's like, oh, you know, I got scarred up over here, but you know what? Fuck it. Leave it. You know, reminds me of it, of what, you know, what not to do day to day or whatever. He's like bench pressing like 200 something pounds. He's like, don't want to get soft out here. So you're like, man, he's a tough ass dude. But then you're like, man, this guy's nuts. Take him out. He goes from he gets very unlikable as the story goes on, of course. And very, very well written, at that, to do that.
Yeah. And the part that gets me is like, whenever toward close to the end of the film, when they steal the ship, with Michelle Rodriguez's character, he comes out there with no oxygen mask on, just starts blasting and just holds his breath. I'm like, holy shit, this is a bad motherfucker, man. Uh-huh. You know? And he's just tough as nails. You also kind of find yourself cheering when he finally gets his at the end, because you're like, finally, they killed that asshole, man. You know, I'm just really curious how they're going to bring him back, you know, in the second one.
Yeah, that's odd. I'm sure they'll, you know, he's got to come back because he's such a, you know, strong part of the movie, as a villain. He had to have gotten rescued somehow at the end, you know, and we'll find out how that happened.
Right.
Unless we have just like unless it starts off where the other one ended and he's just coming back to kind of fill in, a rehash of that.
But
who knows?
You know, I think, you know, we sometimes talk about our favorite parts of a movie. And, you know, I don't think like Avatar necessarily for me watching it doesn't necessarily break ground as far as action sequences. You know, I mean, they're exciting. James Cameron does great, but they're nothing new. I think what my favorite part about Avatar is just the way the world is built around you. And you can't help but kind of get immersed into Pandora and taking it all in. I found myself watching it this week and really just looking at the screen and all the amazing stuff in the backgrounds and all the little details in the film. And I think that there's very few movies like this, you know, I mean, that just immerse you completely in that world. I mean, you know, you can be immersed in the worlds of Star Wars and Star Trek and other science fiction films, but they're a different kind of immersion because there's so much material out of them. Where Avatar is only one film so far. And you find yourself immersed in the world of Pandora. And it's remarkable. And I really thoroughly enjoy the tech. Like every time I watch this, I want to see James Cameron make a movie about mechs fighting. I would fucking love that. Imagine Cameron doing a Gundam movie. Holy shit, man.
He could do it.
Yeah. It would make a gazillion fucking dollars, you know? And he could pull it off. You know, I know he just produced Alita Battle Angel and Robert Rodriguez did a great job with it. But you know, at one point he was going to direct Battle Angel. And I can't, and I love Robert Rodriguez, but I can't help but think what a James Cameron directed Battle Angel would have turned out to be. You know, it'd been absolutely just probably fucking phenomenal. And the Battle Angel we got is really good too. Don't get me wrong, but I just think Cameron version would have been even more remarkable.
Yeah, you can argue that.
And you know, cause Cameron is, one of our great directors, man. And he, his body of work isn't super huge because, you know, we know he went off for 10 years to make water documentaries and things like that. Yeah. And he may not admit it, but I can't help but think Cameron was a little nervous to make another movie after the success of Titanic. And it took him a while to finally get Avatar off the ground. And now it's, we haven't had a movie from him till now. We'll get one next week. First time in 12 years since we've had a Cameron film. I am looking forward to the sequel, man. Even if it's a 3-hour watch, rewatching Avatar this week has me kind of excited for the sequel now. And I'm looking forward to watching it. And, like I said, I just don't know when I'm going to get a chance to go see it since, family's doing family Christmas next weekend. So I'm like, yeah.
So yeah, we'll it's see. Hard. This is, we're coming to the part of the year where it's hard to find that extra time.
Yeah.
But you know, we'll definitely get there.
Yeah. But I'm on
vacation
the week after Christmas. So I'll try to squeeze it in that week, I think.
Yeah. I think I have an off day coming up on Friday, cause I'm working like an extra day. They gave me an extra day off. I might try and see if I can go see it during the day on Friday. Get it, you know, no kids, enjoy it yourself. You know, cause they may have to run to the bathroom. You know, you don't want anything distracting you.
Yeah. You see Cameron, tell people like, it's okay to go to the bathroom. You can watch it again at home or go see it again. You know, he's telling people like,
see it again.
Yeah. He's telling people like, it's okay. I'm not going to be mad at you if you go pee during my movie. You know, I mean, I know I can't make it through a 3-hour movie without peeing. Even if I don't drink a lot of soda, I'm going to have to pee within 3 hours. I'm old and shit.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's such a long stretch of time. You know, you're definitely going to have to go during that stretch, you know, 4 hours. Yeah.
So, you know, and the early reviews of it, the early reactions are coming out and they're saying that it is very good, man. They're saying he does it again. So, you know, we'll see here next week when it hits and see what people say about it. But the original Avatar, man, I think it's on Disney Plus. If you've never seen it, you know, since Disney owns a 20th Century Fox now. And, I think it holds up well. I give this a solid A. I think I can't quite go A+ just because I still stand by. I think the story is fairly generic. But the world building, the tech of the film, just the beauty of it, it's still 12 years later is amazing to me. I think it's still one of the best looking films I've ever seen on screen.
Yeah, no, it's an A. It's absolutely an A. I mentioned the Lorax because I Sigourney Weaver, you know, that's the book she's using to teach English, but it's, you know, also funny that in the film, there's the theme of protecting trees and you've got man's mission to destroy a forest in order to preserve their own way of life and their own greed.
And Cameron, you know, it does come across like, if you look at the script, a little preachy about, you know, saving our resources and our planet and things like that. But to be fair, I was looking, I couldn't find anything where Cameron ever did any interviews where he pushed that. So it wasn't like he wasn't trying to be political. It's just part of the theme, but it's definitely there. You could see it, you know, and that's okay. And, an interesting fact too is they actually created the Na'vi language for these films. You know, they had a lingo scholar create the language for him, and I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, Sam Worthington said it was easier to do the Na'vi accent than the English accent.
Yeah, is he not American?
No, he's Australian.
Oh, that's right, he is Australian. Yeah.
Sam Worthington. Yeah,
I think I've only seen him in like Avatar, Clash of the Titans, and
Salvation.
And Terminator Salvation. Yeah, those are the only movies I really remember seeing him in. You know,
those are the only movies I remember him in too.
Yeah,
was he in Wrath of the Titans?
He was in both of them. Yeah,
I had to be in Wrath of the Titans
wasn't very memorable. It's like even the remake of Clash isn't great, but at least it's watchable. But Wrath of the Titans is pretty rough.
He was in another movie called The Shack.
Well, I mean, he's been in a lot of stuff. I just couldn't remember things I've seen him in, you know. So.
Yeah, I don't remember The Shack. But it's also on Netflix. Got a Rotten Tomato score of 21%. It's probably why we never heard about it.
Probably. All right, well, let's do some news, man.
Yeah.
The Game Awards were this past week, and we got our first look at the sequel to Jedi Fallen Order called Jedi Survivor, and it looks really cool. as we continue the story of Cal, I can't remember how you say his last name. The thing that caught me in the trailer was the Kylo Ren style lightsaber. I was like, well, that's kind of cool, you know.
Cross hilt,
yeah. I haven't finished the first game. My son has, but I enjoyed it for what it was. So I might have to get around to finishing that. When, even though I don't have a PS5, I think it's coming out on the PS4 also. I think this game is. So
it should. We're still getting issues with everyone getting a PS5.
Yeah. So, and the other interesting game was they're making a Hellboy game based on the art style of Mike Mignola, the creator of Hellboy. And I thought that was kind of cool. You know,
that's cool.
And Hellboy seems like he would play well to a video game. Those were the two big
ones. Ron Perlman voices him in the game.
That would be cool if he does.
Yeah, you know,
that'd be neat. What is going on at DC, man? This is I didn't write all this down because we're just going to kind of go off. But word is that Patty Jenkins is not doing Wonder Woman 3. There's rumors that there was a Batman Beyond movie planned when Michael Keaton that was suddenly canned. James Gunn has came out and basically said nothing other than like people stop jumping to conclusions. It takes a long time to plan what we're doing. Nothing's confirmed, but then you get these reports. You get these reports that Jason Momoa is going to still be in the DCU, but not be Aquaman because he might go play Lobo. But then again, James Gunn is only saying, "Look, we're recreating the DC universe, and then the Matt Reeves Batman universe is still going to exist." But there's some wild stuff going on over there, man. It's like there's even rumors that the Batgirl movie could resurface now because of James Gunn. You know that?
Yeah.
There's word that the Black Adam 2 is not going to happen, but then The Rock is over there talking his business, saying no one knows what they're talking about. There's word that Henry Cavill's deal isn't done to come back as Superman, but then again, James Gunn's over saying, "Wait, hold on, we never said that."
Yeah.
There's. But these reports
are the reports that the Wonder Woman script was going to be Trevor
and the Lazarus pit.
Yeah, the Lazarus pit thing. Yeah, I mean, so I wonder if they're just like shelving the story or something, and they're just trying to come up with a different story so that they don't keep bringing back Chris Pine. You know,
exactly. It's like it's weird. And like, and apparently Man of Steel 2 might not happen now, but I think James Gunn is smart enough to realize that you have to build around your big three, Batman, Superman and Wonder Woman. And I think he's smart enough to realize that even if Ben Affleck doesn't come back, you can find someone to play Batman. But I think he knows the fans want Henry Cavill. So hopefully they sort this mess out, and hopefully it's interesting, though, because the reports have to be coming from somewhere. Who's doing it? So there might be some truth behind all this. And James Gunn kind of said that. He said some of it's true, some of it's not. You know? So it's really interesting to see what's going on. I hope they salvage this. And I really hope that at least Henry and Gal Gadot are able to come back. And Jason Momoa. I think Momoa is good as Aquaman. But if he backs out of Aquaman and plays Lobo, that'd be pretty badass, too.
Yeah, he'd make a good Lobo. It just, you know, it's so confusing because you're used to him in this role, and then now all of a sudden he's just going to swap.
Right. So it's just like, and it's weird that all this is happening when we still have Shazam 2 coming out. We still have The Flash coming out and Aquaman coming out. So we still have three DC movies coming out in 2023 that are part of this. So yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens over the next few months,
couple of films. Yeah,
we're gonna stick with DC for a minute. You know, a lot of people weren't sure about what the word was that Kevin Conroy's last voice work was for the Multiverses game, but it turns out he did complete voice work for the new Suicide Squad game, Kill the Justice League, before he passed away. So, this is good news. So we will get one more Kevin Conroy voice of Batman in the Suicide Squad game that's due out later this year. So, I actually read that, and that kind of put a smile on my face. I was like, yeah, that's really good. But so we get to see him be Batman one more time. And speaking of the Flash, it got moved up a week from June 23rd to June 16th. I have a feeling that the publicity for this is probably going to start pretty soon. You know, we're already getting Indiana Jones trailers and other summer movie trailers. I have a feeling that if DC wants to salvage some of this, they need to start the publicity train for the Flash soon. So hopefully a trailer maybe by Christmas or something. And let's get this ball rolling, man. Word is another round of test screenings just happened. And apparently it tested very well. So I think DC and Ezra Miller has been quiet lately. So maybe now's the time to let's start pumping this publicity for this film and see what happens. And I hate it when I write shit down. I can't read my own handwriting. Oh, did you see the full trailer for The Last of Us?
No.
Oh, I did not. HBO put out a full trailer for The Last of Us. And if you're a fan of the game, you're going to be a fan of the trailer. It looks great. I'm not sure about the girl who plays Ellie. You know, maybe not who I would have picked. And I love Pedro Pascal, but I'm still not sold on him completely as Joel, but I like Pedro enough that I think he'll be able to pull it off. But there's a really great shot at the end of the trailer that if you ever played the game, you're just like, oh, fuck yeah. You know, it's one of those kind of goosebump moments. You're like, okay, I'm sold on it. And so it comes out in January in Disney Plus. And I have no idea what I fucking wrote down right here. Let me see if I can find it in my regular news. That's pretty bad, man, when I can't even read my own handwriting, you know?
Write it down too quick. You're like, what was I trying to say?
Yeah, I was like, what was I writing down here? And it probably isn't that big. And there is a little bit of news. If you have HBO Max on the 16th, you haven't seen Black Adam yet, it will be on HBO Max here in just about a week, so you know to be able to watch it. Yeah, man, I don't know. I'm looking through the news where I get my news from, and I must have wrote something down. I don't remember what it was, but oh well, it's not that big a deal. I don't know. Oh, well. Darn. Shoot. Oh, they also announced a new Transformers game at the Game Awards. That looked pretty cool.
Okay.
So, oh, that's right. Jason Reitman's not coming back to direct Ghostbusters 5, whatever one they're calling it. yeah. One of the writers of the first one, Gil Keenan, is going to direct this one. And Sony didn't say why, because it was expected that Jason Reitman was going to come back, but apparently Jason's staying on as a co-writer and a producer. He's just choosing not to direct. I really enjoyed Afterlife. So the cast is coming back and from Afterlife, and so we'll see where they go with it. You know, I think it'll be fun. Finn Woodford from, is that how you say his name, from Stranger Things, he's already read the script and he says it's really good. And so, you know, kind of looking forward to more Ghostbusters. I know my 7-year-old will really enjoy it. So yeah, that's all the news I had. Well, let's preview next week's show. As we get ready for Christmas, we definitely next week will pop culture, this month of pop culture history will be on next week's show. And then in a couple of weeks, we have our end of the year Christmas special episode coming up. But next week, we're going to look back at 20 years since the second of this great trilogy hit theaters. And that is.
Did you see where Jackie Chan had confirmed that Rush Hour 4 is in the works?
Yeah, but I took that with a grain of salt because Chris Tucker has said that. He said that before. Then Chris Tucker says it again, and he said it before, and then it never comes out, you know? So that's kind of like
I read that. There's something I remembered that was, but hopefully it's true. But, you know, I think that's as reliable as a Conan the Barbarian sequel, you know? But continue. Sorry to, you know, interrupt you on the next week's movie announcement. I was just like, oh, what about that Jackie Chan news? Had to interject.
It's all good. So next week we're going to talk 20 years since the second of this great trilogy, and we're going to look back at The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers.
What business does an elf, a man, and a dwarf have in the Riddermark? Speak quickly!
We track a band of Uruk-hai westward across the plain. They have taken two of our friends captive.
Look for your friends, but do not trust to hope. It has forsaken these lands.
We're lost. I don't think Gandalf meant for us to come this way.
He didn't mean for a lot of things to happen, Sam.
We cannot be.
I come back to you now, at the turn of the tide. Sauron's forces have begun their attack. He is using Saruman to destroy your people.
They were unarmed. They had no warning.
This is but a taste of the terror that Saruman will unleash. You must fight.
I will not risk open war.
Open war is upon you, whether you would risk it or not.
A new power is rising. Its victory is at hand.
There is an army bred for a single purpose, to destroy the world of men.
You must lead the people to Helm's Deep.
By order of the king, the city must empty.
Where is she? The woman who gave you that jewel.
The alliance between men and elves is over.
Our time here is ending. Arwen's time is ending. Let her go.
Where is it?
Just tie him up and leave him.
No!
You know the way to Mordor.
There will be no dawn for men.
It's the ring.
Frodo!
It's taken hold of you.
You have the gift of foresight. Tell me what you have seen.
He is not coming back.
The defenses have to hold.
They will hold. There is nothing for you here. Only death.
There is still hope.
We will watch the extended version for this, which is really long, but you know, you got to get the whole thing. And, man, this is my favorite of the three movies. It's just something about this middle chapter, the way it brings it together. There's a lot of great moments in it. I've already started rewatching it to get ready for next week. And it's still such a remarkable movie. I mean, the whole trilogy is, just what Peter Jackson pulled off. And you know, we did Fellowship of the Ring last year, and, we were going to do them all as a trilogy. Then we decided, you know what, let's just do them one each year as they came out. And which means, yes, God willing, we're still podcasting next year to cover Return of the King. And, you know, but looking forward to talking the Two Towers on next week's show, man. So that is a great trilogy of films and well-loved by a lot of people. And it's kind of back in the limelight now with the Rings of Power being on Amazon. People are talking about the Lord of the Rings again and looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is probably my favorite of all three, as well, just because the hunting of the hobbits and then the enormous battle with the legions of orcs.
Yeah.
And the whole thing at Helm's Deep is just really cool. And some cool quotes, you know. Mm-hmm.
Looks like meat's back on the menu, boys.
Yeah, get so many memes from this one.
The Helm's Deep battle is great, and then you know when we'll talk about it more next week. But and one thing I want to say real quick is just rewatching it this week. Like, God, how lucky are we that they were able to get Christopher Lee in this film and Ian McKellen, just two of the greats. I mean, I can never imagine anyone playing those parts ever again. You know, just so awesome. But that's next week on the show, Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. Until then, the RebelRadioPodcast.com, that is our website. We're on all the podcast apps, whether it's iTunes or Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify. We're where all the cool kids go to listen to their shows now. Spotify, man, that's like the thing, you know?
Yeah.
And So you definitely can find us. And we thank you as always for listening, and continue to be safe out there. And don't beat anybody up while you're Christmas shopping, because that's just fucking rude. until next time, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
And remember, as always, just go there and do it.
Go there and do it.